The first thing you need to do is get in touch with those negative feelings. If you're not even aware of them, you're not going to drop them. Lots of people have negative feelings they're not even aware of. Lots of people are depressed and they're not aware they're depressed. It's only when they make contact with joy that they understand how depressed they were. You're not going to be able to deal with a cancer that you haven't detected. You're not going to get rid of wolves in your farm if you're not aware of their existence. So the first thing you need is awareness of your negative feelings. What kind of negative feelings? Gloominess, for instance. You're feeling gloomy and moody. You feel self-dislike and self-hate or guilt. You feel that life is pointless, makes no sense. You've got hurt feelings. You're feeling nervous. You're feeling tense. Get in touch with those feelings first. Second step, this is a four-step program. Understand that the feeling is in you. It's not in reality. Now that's such a self-evident thing, but do you think people know that? They don't, believe me. They've got PhDs. They're presidents of universities. They haven't understood this. They didn't teach me how to live at school. They taught me everything else. Like the guy who said, well, I got a pretty good education and it took me years to get rid of it, to get over it. Yes, you really need it. That's what spirituality is all about, you know, unlearning. Unlearning. Unlearning all the rubbish they taught you. Now, that negative feeling is in you. It's not in reality. So stop trying to change reality. And our bosses, and our friends, and our enemies, and everybody else and everything else. You don't have to change anything. The negative feeling is in you. No person on earth has the power to make you unhappy. Want me to repeat that? It's very important. There is no event on earth that has the power to disturb you or to hurt you. No event. No condition, no situation, no person. Only nobody told you this. They told you the opposite. That is why you're in the mess that you are in right now. That is why you're asleep. They never told you this. But it's self-evident. Rain washes out a picnic. Who's feeling negative? The rain or you? What's causing the negative feeling, the rain or your reaction? When you bump your knee against that chair there or against a table, the table's okay. It's busy being what it was meant to be, a table. The pain is in your knee, not in the table. And it's a funny thing, you know. The mystics keep telling us again and again, reality is all right. Reality is not problematic. Problems only exist in the human mind. We might add, in the stupid, asleep human mind. Reality is not problematic. Take away human beings from this planet, and life would go on, and nature would go on in all her loveliness and her violence. Where would the problem be? No problem. You created the problem. You are the problem. You identified with the me. This is the problem. So understand that the feeling is in you, not in reality. Third step. Never ever identify with that feeling. There's nothing to do with the I. Don't define your essential self in terms of those feelings. Don't say, I am depressed. You want to say, it is depressed, that's okay. You want to say depression is there, that's fine. You want to say gloominess is there, that's fine. But not I am gloomy. You're defining yourself in terms of that feeling. That's your illusion. That's your mistake. You watch it. There is a depression there right now. There is a hurt feeling there right now. Let it be. Leave it alone. It'll pass. Everything passes. But everything. Your depressions and your thrills have nothing to do with happiness. Your depressions and your thrills have nothing to do with your happiness. Those are the swings of the pendulum. I told you yesterday, if you're seeking kicks, you're seeking thrills, get ready for the depression. You want your drug? Get ready for the hangover. One end of the pendulum swings to the other. This has nothing to do with I. This has nothing to do with happiness. This is the me. You know, if you remember this, if you say this to yourself 1,000 times, if you try these 3 steps 1,000 times, maybe you won't even need to do it 3 times. I don't know. There's no rule for it. But do it 1,000 times, you'll make the biggest discovery in your life. To hell with those gold mines in Alaska. What are you going to do with that gold if you're not happy, if you can't live? You found gold. You're a king. You're a princess. You're free. You don't care anymore about being accepted or rejected. Makes no difference. You know this thing that psychologists tell us about how important it is to get a sense of belonging? Baloney. What do you want to belong to anybody for? What do you want to belong to any group for? It doesn't matter anymore. They tell me there's an African tribe. A friend of mine told me that just 3 or 4 days ago. There's an African tribe. There is an African tribe. Where capital punishment means you're ostracized. You're thrown out of the tribe. And the man dies, or the woman dies. Just dies, physically. From the impact of that feeling that they're ostracized. You know, if you were kicked out of New York City, or wherever you're residing, you wouldn't die. How come he dies? Because he partakes of the common stupidity of humanity. He thinks he wouldn't be able to live if he did not belong. Not much different from most people, is it? He's convinced he needs to belong. You don't need to belong to anybody. You don't need to belong to anything or any group. Who told you that? You don't need to be loved. Who fooled you? What you need is to be free. What you need is to love. That, yes, that's your nature. What you need is to be happy, but to be loved? What are you talking about? What you're really telling me is you want to be desired. You idiot. You want to be applauded. You want to be attractive. You want to have all the little monkeys running after you. You're wasting your life. Wake up. Wake up. You don't need this. You could be blissfully happy without this. Your society is not going to be happy to hear this, you know. Because you become terrifying when you open your eyes and understand this. How do you control this kind of person? He doesn't need you. He's not threatened by your criticism. He doesn't care what you think of him or what you say about him. He's cut all those strings. He's not a puppet anymore. He's terrifying. We've got to get rid of him. Crucify him. He tells the truth. He's become fearless. He stopped being human. Human. Behold the human being. At last. Broke out of his slavery. Broke out of their prison. Quick summary. First step. Get in touch with that negative feeling. It's so simple a child could do it. Try it about a dozen times today. I'll give you a couple of exercises after the break. Get in touch with that negative feeling. B. Don't try to change reality. Oh, I'm not saying you won't do something later on. But first of all, let's make sure that you're at peace. Let's make sure that you're awake. Let's make sure that you're not acting, going out in social work from your illusions. Let's make sure that you're real. Now, we may change things or we may not, but what you have to understand is that the negative feeling is in you, not in the events. No event justifies a negative feeling, period. Get that one. There is no situation in the world that justifies a negative feeling. That's what all our mystics have been crying themselves hoarse to tell us, but nobody hears. The negative feeling is in you. The Bhagavad Gita, the sacred book of the Hindus, Lord Krishna says to Arjuna, marvelous sentence, plunge into the heat of battle and keep your heart at the lotus feet of the Lord. Keep your heart at peace at the lotus feet of the Lord. Plunge into the heat of battle. Because as some of you probably know, the book is set on a battleground. Extraordinary symbolism there. Do I run away from the battle? Do I fight my relatives? Go right ahead. Do your duty, but your heart is unaffected. The eye is unaffected. So, the negative feeling is in you. Understand that. Put the focus where it belongs. Stop blaming other people. There are people in your situation who would not react negatively. How about that now? You know, you'll notice a funny thing happening to you. You'll think you're really going crazy because you know what you're going to be doing after a while? Seeking out the company of people whom you avoided before because they created negative feelings in you. You're going to be saying, let's see if he creates a negative feeling in me now. He doesn't. He doesn't. Glory be to God. That's the kind of thing you're going to be doing. You're going to go out into the lanes, the byways, the hedges, and bring in the lame and the crippled and the blind and the dumb. You're bringing them all in. Bring them all in. There's room for everybody. Remember that sentence I said to you yesterday? To include the excluded. To return love for hate. Easiest thing in the world. If you understand that the negative feeling is in you. Third step. Don't ever identify with that feeling. That feeling isn't you. It has nothing to do with you. Later we'll find out where it comes from. It's the result of your conditioning. It's humiliating to realize, perhaps, that you were trained to react that way. You were trained to react that way, for heaven's sake. All right, that'll do. Let's take a 20-minute break. That was a 4-point program, wasn't it? And I gave you only 3. I can see you're quite eager to get the 4th point. That's very encouraging for the speaker, you know. All right. So remember we said, point 1, identify the negative feeling. If you would drop it, you would be happy. You don't even need to drop it to be happy. Happiness is your state of being. You don't have to do anything to acquire happiness. The great Meister Eckhart said very beautifully, God is not attained by a process of addition to anything in the soul, but by a process of subtraction. You don't do anything to be free. You drop something. Then you're free. Reminded of the Irish prisoner who dug a tunnel under the prison, managed to escape. He comes out right in the middle of a school playground with these little children playing. And of course, when he emerges from the tunnel, he couldn't restrain himself anymore. He began to jump up and down and said, "I'm free, I'm free, I'm free." And there was a little girl there who looks at him scornfully and she says, "That's nothing, I'm four." So you drop something. You drop your prison cage and you're free. You don't do anything. You drop your illusions and you're awake. You drop your attachments and you are love. You are sensitive. You are conscious. You're in touch with all of life. You drop your misconceptions, your negativity, and you have happiness. The other thing that you acquire isn't happiness at all. Those are thrills. That's your drug. And I'm sure it has occurred to some of you to think, wouldn't it be a dull life with no cravings and no thrills? Wouldn't that be dull? That's right, the addict always feels that life would be dull without the drug. When you taste it, you'll understand. So, step number one, get in touch with those negative feelings. Identify them. Step two, understand that those feelings are in you, in the me, not in the external world, not in other people. Step three, never identify the I with those feelings. Feelings come and go. Just as I am not my thoughts, I am not my body cells, I am not my clothes, I am not my name, I am not my profession, I am not these feelings, I am not depressed. Depression exists right now, there within me. I observe it. I watch it. And let it be. Stop trying to fix it. Let it be. It's all right. Someday you will understand it. And that's the fourth point. How about change? How about changing things? How about changing ourselves? Now there are many things you have to understand here. Or basically just one thing. But could be expressed in many ways. Imagine a patient goes to a doctor and tells the doctor what he is suffering from. And the doctor says, "Very well, I've understood your symptoms. You know what I'll do? I'll prescribe a medicine for your neighbor." And the patient replies, "Thank you very much, doctor. That makes me feel much better." Isn't that absurd? Isn't that absurd? That's what we're all doing. Repeatedly, people are doing this. The sleeper always feels that he'll feel much better if somebody else changes. You're suffering because you're asleep. And you think how wonderful life would be if somebody else changed. How wonderful life would be if my neighbor changed, my wife changed, my husband changed, my boss changed. There's that lovely Zen couplet written by one of the great masters. I sometimes make an exercise out of it, but we're not going to have time to do it here. When we have these longer courses of 8 or 9 days, then we can afford that kind of luxury. The man says, "If my grumbling wife were alive tonight, I would have enjoyed the sight of the moon. If my grumbling wife had been alive tonight, how I would have enjoyed the sight of the moon. We better not go too deep into that one. Well, we always want somebody else to change so that we will feel good. But has it ever struck you that if your wife changes or your husband changes, what does that do to you? You're just as vulnerable as before. You're just as idiotic as before. You're just as asleep as before. It's you who need to change. It's you who need to take the medicine. So, there's always the feeling of, I feel good because the world is right. Wrong. The world is right because I feel good. That's what all the mystics are saying. When you awake, when you understand, when you see, the world becomes right. We're always bothered, aren't we, by the problem of evil. That extraordinary, powerful story of the little kid who's walking in a jungle village in Africa along the bank of a river and sees a crocodile who's been trapped in a net. And the crocodile says, would you have pity on me and release me? I may look ugly, but it isn't my fault, you know. I was made this way. And whatever my external appearance, I've got a mother's heart. I came out this morning in search of food for my young ones. And I got into this trap. And the boy says, aha, if I were to help you out of that trap, you'd kill me. You'd grab me. And the crocodile says, do you think I'd do that to my benefactor and liberator? So the boy was persuaded, and he took the net off, and the crocodile grabbed him. There he was, caught between the jaws of the crocodile, and he says, so this is what I get for my good action. And the crocodile says, well, don't take it personally, son. This is the way the world is. This is the law of life. And the boy says, this is not the way the world is. This is not the law of life. And the crocodile says, you want to ask someone? He says, sees a bird sitting up on a branch. And he says, bird, this is what the crocodile says. What have you to say? The bird says, the crocodile is right. Look at me. I was coming home one day with food for my fledglings. And imagine my horror as I was coming back to my nest to see a snake crawling up that tree, making straight for my nest. And I was totally helpless while it kept devouring my young ones one after the other. I kept screaming and shouting, but it was useless. The crocodile is right. This is the law of life. This is the way the world is. See, said the crocodile. Come, let's go. The boy said, well, let me ask someone else. And the crocodile said, all right, go ahead. And there was an old donkey passing by the bank of that river. And he said, donkey, this is what the crocodile says. Is the crocodile right? And the donkey said, the crocodile is quite right. Look at me. I've worked and slaved for my master all my life. And he barely gave me enough to eat. And now that I'm old and useless, he has turned me loose. And here I am wandering in the jungle, waiting for some wild beast to pounce on me and put an end to my life. The crocodile is right. This is the law of life. This is the way the world is. See, says the crocodile, let's go. The boy said, give me one chance, one last chance. Let me ask one other being. Look how good I was to you. So the crocodile said, all right, your last chance. And the boy sees a rabbit passing by and he says, rabbit, is the crocodile right? The rabbit sits on its haunches and says to the crocodile, did you say that to that kid? And the crocodile said, yes, I did. He said, wait a minute now. We've got to discuss that. The crocodile said, go right ahead. And the rabbit said, how could we discuss it if you've got that boy in your mouth? Release him He's got to take part in the discussion too. The crocodile says, "You're a clever one, you are. The moment I release him, he'll run away." And the rabbit said, "I thought you had more sense than that. If he attempted to run away, one slash of your tail would kill him." "Fair enough," said the crocodile. So he released the boy. And the moment the boy was released, the rabbit said, "Run!" And he ran and escaped. Then said the rabbit to the boy, "Don't you enjoy crocodile flesh? Don't the people in your village, wouldn't they like to have a good meal? You know something? You didn't really release that crocodile. Most of his body still caught in the nest. Why don't you go to the village and bring everybody and have a banquet?" So that's exactly what the boy did. He went to the village, called all the men folk. They came with their axes and staves and spears to kill the crocodile. And the boy's dog came with him. And when the dog saw the rabbit, he gave chase, caught hold of the rabbit, and throttled it. And the boy comes panting on the scene, too late. And as he watches the rabbit die, he says, "The crocodile was right. This is the way the world is. This is the law of life." And there's no explanation you could give that would explain away all the suffering and the evil and the torture and the destruction and the hunger in the world. You never explain it. You're trying gamely with your formulas, religious and otherwise, but you never explain it. Because life is a mystery, which means your thinking mind cannot make sense out of it. For that, you've got to wake up. And you suddenly realize that reality is not problematic. You are the problem. The scriptures are always hinting at that, but you'll never get it because you won't understand a word of what the scriptures are saying till you wake up. Sleeping people read the scriptures and crucify the Messiah on the basis of them. You've got to wake up to make sense out of the scriptures. But you know something? When you do wake up, they make sense. So does reality. But you'd never be able to put it into words. Now, wouldn't you do something? Wouldn't you swing into action? Of course you'd swing into action. But we've got to make sure that you're not swinging into action to get rid of your negative feelings. Am I making sense? Lots of people swing into action and only make things worse, you know, because they're not coming from love. They're coming from negative feelings. They're coming from guilt, from anger, from hate, from a sense of injustice, or whatever. We got to make sure of that first. We've got to make sure of your being before you swing into action. You got to make sure of who you are before we see what you do. And unfortunately, when sleeping people swing into action, they just substitute one cruelty with another, one injustice with another, and so it goes on. Meister Rekha, again, says so powerfully, "It is not by your actions that you will be saved or awakened, call it any word you want, but by your being. It is not by what you do, but by what you are that you will be judged." Of course, of what good is it to you to feed the hungry and give drink to the thirsty and visit the prisoners in jail? Remember that sentence? "I could give my body to be burnt and all my goods to feed the poor, but if I have not love..." That's important. Not your action. Not your action. Forget it. It's your being. then you might get into action or you might not get into action. You can't decide that till you know, till you understand, till you're awake. And unfortunately, all the emphasis is being put on changing the world and very little emphasis on waking you up. When you wake up, you will know what to do or what not to do. Some of the mystics are very strange, you know, like that man Jesus who says, I wasn't sent to those people. I just limit myself to what I'm supposed to do right now. Later, maybe. Some of them go into silence, mysteriously. Some of them sing songs. Some of them get into service. We're never sure. They're a law unto themselves. They know exactly what is to be done. Get into the heat of battle. Keep your heart at the lotus feet of the Lord, as I said to you this morning. So, see what happens to us when we're asleep. It's like I said to you before, the world is good or the world is right because you feel good. Imagine that you're unwell and you're in a foul mood and they're taking you through some lovely countryside, beautiful landscape, but you're not in the mood for seeing anything. Another day you pass by the same place and you say, good heavens, where was I that I didn't notice all of this? Everything becomes beautiful when you change. You're looking at the trees and the mountains through windows that are wet with the rain and a storm, and everything looks blurred and shapeless. And you want to go right out there and change those trees and change those mountains. Wait a minute. Let's examine your window. When the storm ceases and the rain stops and you look out of the window, you say, well, how different everything looks. Because we see people and things not as they are, but as we are. And it's so important to understand that. That is why when two people look at something or look at someone, you get two different reactions. We see things and people not as they are, but as we are. Remember that sentence about everything turning to good for those who love God? When you awake, you don't try to make good things happen. They just happen. They just happen. Because you understand suddenly that everything that happens to you is good. Marvelous. So think of the people you're living with and whom you want to change. You find them moody, inconsiderate, unreliable, treacherous, or whatever. When you are different, they will be different. That's an infallible and miraculous cure. The day you are different, they will become different. You will see them differently. He seemed so terrifying, he's actually frightened. She seemed so rude, I am actually frightened. Or whatever. We suddenly see things differently. All of a sudden, no one has the power to hurt you anymore. No one has the power to put pressure on you. It's a marvelous state. You're putting pressure on me. You know, it's something like this. It's like you leave a book on the table and I pick it up and I say, you're pressing this book on me. I'm not pressing any book on me. You're doing your thing. It's up to me to pick it up or not to pick it up. But people never understood that. They're so busy accusing everybody else, blaming everyone else, blaming life, blaming society, blaming their neighbor. You never change that way. You continue in your nightmare. You never wake up. So, if you would put this program into action, as I said to you this morning, 1,000 times, A, identify the negative feelings. B, understand that they are in you, not in the world, not in external reality. C, do not say that that is an essential part of I. These things come and go. D, understand that when you change, everything changes. That still leaves us with the big question, how do I change? Do I do anything to change myself? I'm going to leave that for a little later. Let me give you a 2-minute exercise, give you a little discussion, field a few questions because I've done so much talking this morning. Then we'll move on to, do I do anything to change myself? Got a big surprise for you. Lots of good news. Even better news. You don't have to do anything. The more you do, the worse it gets. All you have to do is understand. What you understand will change. Will always change. But more about that later. After this little exercise. This sounds like a commercial almost, doesn't it? Now, let's try this one. Get in touch with yourself for a few seconds. Become aware of your presence in this room. Become aware of the kind of thoughts that are going on within you. Think of somebody you're living with or you're working with whom you do not like, who causes negative feelings to arise within you. Now let's help you to understand that, to understand what's going on. The first thing you need to understand is that the negative feeling is in you. You are responsible for the negative feeling, not the other person. Somebody else in your place would be perfectly calm and at ease in the presence of this person. Wouldn't be affected. You are. Now, understand another thing. You're making a demand there. You have an expectation of this person. Can you get in touch with that? Now, say to this person, I have no right to make any demand on you. Because as you say that, you will drop your expectations. I have no right to make any demand on you. Oh, I'll protect myself from the consequences of your actions or your moods or whatever. But you could go right ahead and be what you choose to be. I have no right to make any demands on you. See what happens to you when you do this. And if there's a resistance to saying that, my, how much you're going to discover about your me. Ha-ha. Let the dictator come out. Let the tyrant come out. You thought you were such a little lamb, didn't you? I'm a tyrant, you're a tyrant. Little variety from I'm an ass, you're an ass. I'm a dictator, you're a dictator. I want to run your life for you. I want to tell you exactly how you're expected to be and how you're expected to behave. And you'd better behave as I have decided you have to behave, or else I shall punish myself by having negative feelings. That sounds so wise, doesn't it? Remember what I told you? Everybody's a lunatic. Now you're catching on. Okay, give it a few seconds more, and we'll call a halt to the exercise. That will do. Okay, let's have those questions. Do you have any questions? Yes.
Yesterday when I got home, I found out that my son got an award from his in high school. He got an award for excellence in sports and academics. I was happy for him that he did that. But I was almost tempted to say, no glory in that award, because it's setting you up for the time when you cannot perform as well. So I'm at a dilemma right now. How am I to prevent the same thing happening to him that has happened to me without cursing the problem at this time?
Hopefully he'll learn, as you yourself grow in wisdom, it's not a matter of anything you say to him, but something that eventually you will become, and he will understand. Then you will know what to say and when. That award, the result of cruelty, the result of competition, built on hatred of oneself and of others. Ever thought of that? You get a good feeling on the basis of somebody getting a bad feeling. You win over somebody else. Isn't that terrible? Taken for granted in the lunatic asylum. There's an American doctor who wrote about the results of competition on his life. He said he went to medical school in Switzerland. And he said there was a fairly large contingent of Americans at that school. He said some of us went into shock when we realized that there were no grades and there were no awards and there was no marks list. There was no first or second rank at medical school. You either passed or you did not. So he said, some of us simply couldn't take it. We became kind of paranoid. We thought, there must be some kind of a trick here. And he says, they couldn't take it, so they went to another university. They went to another school. He said, those of us who survived that suddenly discovered a strange thing that we had never noticed at our American universities. Students, brilliant ones, helping one another to pass, sharing notes. Hey, you might want to read this. He says, my son goes to medical school in the States now, and he tells me that in the practicals, people frequently skew up the microscope so that it'll take the next guy 3 or 4 minutes to rearrange it. They got to get ahead. Competition. They got to succeed. They got to be perfect. And he tells a lovely little story, which he says is real, but it could serve as a beautiful parable of a little town in the States where people gathered of an evening to make music. You had a saxophonist and a drummer and a violinist, and mostly old people. They got together for the company and for the sheer joy of making music, though they didn't make it very well. Why do you have to do things well? Do them enjoyably, not well. So they were enjoying themselves, having a great time, till they decided they'd get a new conductor who had a lot of go and a lot of ambition and a lot of drive, and he said, "Hey folks, we've got to make a concert. We've got to prepare a concert for the town." So then he gradually got rid of some of the people who didn't play too well, hired a couple of musicians, got an orchestra into shape, and they got their names into the newspaper. Wasn't that wonderful? And then they decided they'd go to the big city and play there. And some of the older people had tears in their eyes as they thought, "Well, it was so wonderful in the old days when we did things badly and enjoyably." Cruelty came in, but nobody recognized it as cruelty. See how lunatic people have got? Oh, all right. What's the meaning of that sentence I added about, "I protect myself, you go ahead and be yourself, that's all right, but I'll be myself"? In other words, I won't allow you to manipulate me. I'll live my life, I'll go my way, I leave myself free to think my thoughts and to follow my inclinations and my tastes, and I'll say no to you. And if I think I don't want to be in your company, that'll be fine, but it won't be because of any negative feelings that you cause in me, because you don't anymore. You don't have any more power over me. But I just might prefer other people's company. And when you say to me, "How about a movie tonight?" and I say, "Sorry, I want to go with someone else. I enjoy his company more than yours," that's all right. Just say no to people. That's wonderful. That's part of waking up. Part of waking up is that you would live your life as you see fit and understand that that is not selfish. The selfish thing is to demand that someone else live their lives as you see fit. Ah, that's selfish. My, that's a big sentence to take in a few minutes. You probably need a whole day for that. It is not selfish to live your life as you see fit. The selfishness lies in demanding that someone else live their life to suit your taste, or your pride, or your profit, or your pleasure. That is selfish indeed. So, I'll protect myself. I don't feel obligated to be with you. I don't feel obligated to say yes to you. If I find that your company is pleasant, fine, I'll enjoy it without clinging to it. And I no longer avoid you because of any negative feelings you create. You don't have that power anymore. Many other hands going up. Yes, John.
I'm beginning to wonder if it's possible for a phobia of weight to rise. Like, I realize that if I, you know, run into you a year from now in Paris, of all places, and I say, "No calling me. What a surprise to meet you, and I'm excited." But I'm also realize I'm excited because maybe where I can get some meeting with you, there's a selfish thing there. But I'm wondering if it might be for some surprise.
Well, it all depends on what you mean by surprise. When you don't expect something and it happens, you feel surprised. But I think what you're describing there, John, is a thrill. Would you be thrilled? I doubt it. You wouldn't want drugs anymore. You lose your taste for them. Every minute is so enjoyable that you wouldn't go in for kicks. You know the way some people just don't have a taste for drugs? Others do.
How would you describe a surprise in this room?
Oh, surprise means, I didn't expect that today's session would be cancelled. It was. I'm surprised. As Webster is reported to have said to his wife, I think she said she caught him kissing the maid. And she said she was very surprised. Now, Webster, who was a stickler for using words accurately, understandably, he wrote a dictionary. He said, "No, my dear, I am surprised. You are astonished." Yes. How many people are asking questions about what will happen when we wake up? Why bother? Let's wake up. Does it matter to you so much that you be awakened? That's awful. You know what you're going to do now? You're going to make that a goal. And you're going to be determined to get there. And you're going to say, "I refuse to be happy until I'm awakened." So, it's okay to be the way you are and be aware of the way you are, because awareness is happiness. But you won't understand that right now, probably. And you'll understand that you reacted so quickly because you were not aware. And you'll understand that there are times when you react even in awareness. But as awareness grows, you react less and you act more. You come less from here and more from here. And it really doesn't matter. You know, there's the story of a disciple who says to his guru that he's going to go to some place and meditate and hopefully attain enlightenment. So he sends him a note every 6 months to report the progress that he's making. And the first report says, "Now I understand what it means to lose the self." The guru tore that up and threw it in the waste paper basket. Then he gets another report after 6 months which says, "Now I have attained to sensitivity to all beings," torn up. Then another report says, "Now I understand the secret of the one in the many," torn up. And so it goes on for years until finally no reports come in. No more reports. So the guru becomes curious, and one day when there's a traveler going by that side, he says to him, "Why don't you find out what happened to that guy?" And he gets a note from the guy saying, "What does it matter?" And when the guru gets that, he says, "No, he made it! He made it! He made it! He got it! He got it!" Know the one about the soldier who on a battlefield would drop his rifle and pick up a scrap of paper and look at it, and then he would let it fall from his hands, it would flutter to the ground, and then he'd go somewhere else and pick up a scrap of paper and let it fall to the ground. And they said, "This man's exposing himself to death, he needs help." So they put him in hospital, they get the best psychiatrist to work on him, but it seems to have no effect. He wanders around the wards, he picks up scraps of paper, he looks at them idly, lets them flutter to the ground. In the end, they say, "We've got to discharge this guy. We've got to discharge him. He, you know." So they call him in, and they give him a certificate, kind of discharging him. And he picks it up idly, looks at it, he says, "This is it! This is it!" That's right. What does it matter? So begin to be aware of your present condition, whatever that condition is. Stop being a dictator, I'll have to talk about that this afternoon, and trying to push yourself anywhere. And someday you will understand how, in that awareness, you have attained it, but you didn't know it. But that will come gradually. Be aware. And I'll explain to you this afternoon how awareness will bring the change. Where does compassion come in? Where does guilt come in? You'll know when you're awake. If you're guilty right now, how on earth could I explain that to you? And how would you know what compassion is? You know, sometimes people want to imitate Christ. When a monkey plays the saxophone, that doesn't make him a musician. It really doesn't. You can't imitate Christ by imitating his external behavior. You've got to be Christ, then you know exactly what to do in a given situation, given your temperament, given your character, given your situation, given the character and temperament of the person you're dealing with, you know exactly what to do. No one can tell you. But for that, you must become. You must be what Christ was. You will know. But merely external imitation will get you nowhere. You may think that compassion is softness. There's no way I could describe compassion to you. There's absolutely no way. Compassion can be very hard. Compassion can be very rude. Compassion can jolt you. Compassion can roll its sleeves up and operate on you. There are all kinds of things. Compassion can be very soft. There's no way of knowing. It's only when you become love. In other words, when you have dropped your illusions and your attachments, that you will know. As you identify less and less with the me, you're more at ease with everybody and with everything. Do you know why? Because you are no longer afraid of being hurt or not liked or being left. And you no longer desire to impress anyone. Can you imagine the relief when you don't have to impress anybody anymore? Oh, what a relief. Happiness at last. And as I said to you this morning, you don't feel the need or the compulsion to explain anything anymore. It's all right. What's there to be explained? And you don't feel the need or the compulsion to apologize anymore. What could you expect of an ass? He behaved like an ass. Now what I need to tell you, you don't even feel the need to say that. But if anything had to be said, I'd much rather hear you say, you know, I've come awake, than hear you say, I'm sorry. I'd much rather hear you say to me, I've come awake since we last met. Won't happen again. Than to hear you say, I'm so sorry. Why would I demand an apology from you? Ever thought of that? Why would anyone demand an apology? Ah, there you've got something to explore. You're thinking of someone mean to you. Nobody was mean to you. You missed that. Somebody was mean to what he thought or she thought was you. But not you. Nobody ever rejects you. You're just rejecting what they think you are. If you choose to pick that up, that's your responsibility. But that cuts both ways, you know. Nobody ever accepts you either. Ever thought of that one? Until somebody is awake, that's the way they're behaving. They're accepting or rejecting their image of you. They've fashioned an image of you, and they're rejecting that, or they're accepting that. See, devastating to go deeply into that. A bit too liberating. Very liberating. Somebody talked about compassion. How easy it is to love people when you understand this. How easy it is to love everyone when you don't identify with this or what they think this is. You don't identify, so easy to love them, to love everybody. Yes, did you understand me to say the thinking I and the feeling me? I observing me, but not thinking, because me does a lot of bad thinking and good thinking too. But when I watches me, I is constantly aware. This is a reflection. In reality, you don't really think of I and me. In reality, you're like that driver driving the car who doesn't want to lose consciousness of the car ever. Now, are you telling me you want to go unconscious sometimes? It's all right to dream. It's all right to have daydreams. But never lose consciousness of your surroundings. You're always alert. You know, it's like a mother who would be sleeping. She doesn't hear the planes roaring above the house, but she hears the slightest whimper of the baby. She's alert. She's awake in that sense. That's what I mean. So you probably didn't quite get what I was hinting at, or maybe I didn't explain it clearly enough. When a person's awake, the person's awake. Let's get there. Then we'll know. One may not say anything about the awakened state. One can only talk about the sleeping state. One hints at the awakened state. One may not say anything about happiness. Happiness cannot be defined. What can be defined is misery, unhappiness. Drop that and you will know. Love cannot be defined. Unlove can. Drop unlove, drop fear, and you will know. Another hand up there. Yes. Yes. Did anybody hear me say I don't favor meditation? No, that's all right. Meditation's okay. In fact, that's what I'm recommending the whole time. Yes. That's a good one. Wouldn't this cause pain to the people around you who are still asleep? You're causing a lot of pain when you are asleep, you know. Plenty of it. You want everybody to be awake. Good. Meaning yourself too. Now that's a good place to start. Okay. Oh, you don't want to be awake. Oh, you are? Congratulations. Yes. You'll know when you wake up. Everybody's asking questions on what will happen when they arrive. Very few are really. Is this curiosity? That's the word. Curiosity. It doesn't matter. What's important is that you would have grasped what I'm saying. But we're always asking, how would this fit into that system? Or would this make sense in that context? Or what will it feel like when we get there? Get started. You'll know. It cannot be described. We cannot say. And so it is said so widely in the East. Those who know do not say. Those who say do not know. It cannot be said. Only the opposite can be said. The guru cannot give you truth, as I shall explain to you sooner or later. Truth cannot be put into words. You have a formula. That isn't the truth. That isn't the reality. Reality cannot be put into a formula. The guru can only point out your errors. When you drop your errors, you will know truth. And then you cannot say. This is common teaching among the great Catholic mystics, the great Thomas Aquinas, who towards the end of his life, I thought he kept that famous silence of his for just a couple of months or something. It went on for years. He wouldn't write, he wouldn't talk. He had seen. And he realized that he had made a fool of himself, and he said so explicitly. It's like, if you've never tasted a green mango, which are found in abundance in my country, and you said to me, what does it taste like? And I say to you, oh. And in giving you a word, I've put you off the track. Try to understand that. Unless you're very wise, which most people are not, they seize upon the word. They seize upon the words of Scripture. And they've got it all wrong. Sour. And you say vinegar sour. Oh, no, no, not vinegar sour. You say lemon sour. You say, no, 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 not lemon sour. What sour? Mango sour. But I've never tasted one. Too bad. Then you go ahead and write a doctoral thesis on it. You wouldn't have if you had tasted it. You really wouldn't. You would have written a doctoral thesis on other things, but not on this. And the day you taste a green mango, you say, God, I made a fool of myself. I shouldn't have written that thesis. Exactly what Thomas Aquinas did. He read a whole book written by a great German philosopher and theologian precisely on the silence of St. Thomas. He just went silent, that's all. He wouldn't talk. The great foundation of his Summa Theologica, which was the summary of all his theology, in the prologue he says, about God, we cannot say what he is, but rather what he is not. And so we cannot speak about how he is, but rather how he is not. And then he talks in his famous commentary of Boetius, De Trinitate, on the Trinity. And he says there are three ways of knowing God. One, in his creation. Two, in his action through creation. And the highest form of the knowledge of God is to know him tamquam ignotum, to know that one does not know. The highest form, talking about the Trinity, to know that one does not know. Now, this is not an Oriental Zen master. This is a canonized saint of the Roman Catholic Church, the prince of theologians for centuries who's talking. To know him as unknown, and in another place he says, as unknowable. I'll explain that to you, possibly this afternoon. Why reality, God, divinity, truth, love is unknowable, meaning cannot be comprehended by the thinking mind. I'll explain that to you. I'll show you why it is so. And that will set at rest so many questions that people would have, because we're always living under the illusion that we know. We don't. We cannot know. What then is Scripture? A hint. A clue, not a description, silly. The fanaticism of a sincere believer causes more evil than the united efforts of 200 rogues. It really does. It's terrifying to see what sincere believers will do because they think they know. You don't. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a world where everybody said we don't know? Wouldn't that be marvelous? We don't know. A man born blind who comes to me and says, what is this thing called reality? Or rather, what's the color green? What's the color green like? And how does one describe the color green to someone who is born blind? One uses analogies. One says, you know, the color green, it's something like soft music. He says, oh, something like soft music? Yeah, soothing, soft. Oh, okay. Another guy comes to me and says, what's the color green like? I say, you know, it's something like soft satin. Very soft to the touch and soothing. He says, oh, I see. The next day I know they're bashing each other over the head with bottles. One saying it's soft music. The other one says it's satin. And so it goes on. And neither of them knows a thing of what they're talking about. Because if they did, they'd shut up. It's as bad as that. And it's even worse. Because one day, you restore sight to this man. And he's sitting there in the garden. And he's looking all around him. And I say to him, well, now you know what the color green is. He says, that's right, I heard some of it this morning. You know you're surrounded by God and you don't see him because you know about him, that's why. The final barrier to the vision of God is God. is your God concept. You miss it because you think you know. That's the terrible thing about religion. That's what the Gospels are saying. They knew, so they got rid of him. The highest knowledge of God is to know God as unknowable. There's far too much God talk. The world is sick of it. There's too little awareness, too little love, too little happiness. Or let's not use those words either. There's too little dropping of illusions, dropping of errors, dropping of attachments and cruelty. Too little awareness. That's what the world is suffering from. Not lack of religion, lack of awareness, lack of waking up. That's what religion is all about. That's what it's supposed to be about. Look what we degenerated into. Come to my country and see them killing one another. You find it everywhere. This is what it ended up in. So, the one who knows does not say. The one who says does not know. All revelations, however divine, are never anything more than a finger pointing to the moon. And as we say in the East, when the sage points to the moon, all that the idiot sees is the finger. Jean Guiton, very pious, orthodox, Catholic writer in France, adds a terrifying comment. We frequently use the finger to gouge our eyes out. Isn't that terrible? So, awareness, awareness, awareness. In awareness is healing. In awareness is truth. In awareness is salvation. In awareness is spirituality. In awareness is growth. In awareness is love. In awareness is awakening. Awareness. I talk to you so far about awareness of what goes on in the self, the me, why it is that when we look at a tree, we really don't see it. We think we do, but we don't. When we look at a person, we don't really see that person. We think we do. What we're seeing is something that we fixed in our mind. We get an impression, we hold on to that impression, and we keep looking at that person through that impression. And we do this with almost everything. If you understand that, then you will understand the loveliness and beauty of being aware also of everything around you. Because reality is there. God, whatever that is there. It's all there. The little fish in the ocean. Excuse me, he says. I'm looking for the ocean. Could you tell me where I could find it? Pathetic, isn't it? So, if we would open our eyes and see and realize, then we would understand.